Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. If you're living in Kenya and want to hear the latest international news, you can listen to the BBC, the Voice of America, or Al Jazeera. Africans can also tune into China Radio International, which is gaining ground in the crowded market. In the capital, Nairobi, they can read local newspapers with articles provided for free by the Chinese state news agency, Xinhua. Or they can get a mix of international and African news on China Central Television, or CCTV. Earlier this year, CCTV built its first international broadcast hub in Nairobi. China's state-run news media are growing at a fast pace around the world, particularly in Africa. At a time when broadcasting and newspaper companies based in America and Europe are scaling back their international operations. The expansions are part of a campaign by the Chinese Communist Party to improve China's image around the world and bolster its influence in areas where Beijing is economically and politically active. Yu Shen Wu, a researcher at South Africa Institute of International Affairs, recently wrote about these new media dynamics in a paper titled "The Rise of China's State-Led Media Dynasty in Africa." Yu Shen is our guest today on Global Journalist, along with Ayo Johnson, the founder and director of a news agency called Viewpoint Africa. Yu Shen is joining us from Johannesburg, and Ayo is in London. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Now, over the last decade, China has quietly invested in billions of dollars in Africa to build roads, pipelines, and other infrastructure, including communications infrastructure. Another campaign with a reported bankroll of $7 billion is a drive to expand China's soft power. Yu Shen, what's behind China's initiative to win over the hearts and minds of everyday Africans? Why here? Why now?
You know, when I set out writing this paper, it was really important to draw out the bigger context. I think we see these headlines about the Chinese media in Africa and in the U.S. and all over the world, and we forget that there's been a long process. It didn't just happen in a day. So if we're looking at the impetus for why this happened, I think there are three main levels of motivation. First, you know, the global context. So, I mean, if we're looking at emerging countries in general, they are engaging in new areas of engagement, and this is inevitable with their growth and their rise. And one of the areas that they're starting to look at is influence. And I think governments of these countries are realizing that they need to participate in positive imagery, and they're also using the media, you know, to send the message and their own point of views. And, of course, we had the 2008 financial crisis, and this allowed these countries to also, you know, spend money while other news stations were curving back. And, of course, on a national level, if we're looking at China specifically, I pointed to 2008 as an important year for China because we know it hosted the 2008 Beijing Olympics,
right,
and it was an opportunity to really show its positive image. But at the same time, we had international human rights groups criticizing China on its human rights record, particularly on the Darfur crisis. While internally you had the Tibetan, you know, riots. So I think all these aspects were really affecting, you know, China's image in the world. And it realized that, you know, that the world is more sympathetic to the narrative that they know. And then you would go on to how it's engaging with strategic areas of the world. And I think important questions are being raised about China's development and how this is going to affect Africa's growth and competitiveness. And I think, so, you know, with these questions is part of the reason why China has to embark on a public diplomacy drive. And it's using the media is one of the means to communicate greater understanding of its culture, its policies, and its values.
Right. And Ayo, you've said that the growing influence of China has Western leaders very rattled and puts African countries in a stronger bargaining position. Can you expand on those two points?
Yes. Firstly, the last 50 years, many Africans would think that the so-called carrot and stick approach by the international community, mainly the West, has not really benefited them. The trade versus aid model hasn't worked. 80% of the population of Africa still live below the poverty line. And of course, the introduction of China into the equation, especially over the last 10 years, where their model of interaction with Africa has been no questions asked, carry on as usual, all we will do is we'll build your bridges, your roads, your infrastructure for free, don't ask any questions, don't have any conditionality attached to it, just for access to your raw materials. And what has happened is that the African leaders have become that much more aware and acute about what geopolitics is about. And they're now leveraging on this new liberalized feelings that they do have, the fact that they can vote with their feet and change supplier at will. So this has actually put the West in a very difficult position. Now they can't really apply the usual pressures on African leaders as they've done previously, fearful that such decisions and such actions may lead contracts to be cancelled at short in a matter of a heartbeat, and of course China is lurking in the woods to take advantage of those opportunities. So I personally feel that the West is slightly rattled, especially with the dominance by which China has been able to cover ground across the African continent in terms of its investment opportunities, but very much so the extent by which African leaders have been willing to embrace China with this investment relationship moving forward. And the battle of hearts and minds that you've already mentioned about is just China moving the goalpost that much further in terms of trying not only to control Africa's minerals, not only to have influence in the fashion it does, not only to provide soft loans to African government and sideline the IMF and the World Bank, but also now to be able to influence the so-called mind culture in terms of how Africa perceives itself. For too long, many Africans have had this notion that the continent is surrounded by death, disease, and destruction in terms of how the international community, especially the West, has perceived it in its media. And because Africans can't tell their own stories now because of the financial, especially on the global platforms, compared like the BBCs and the CNNs of this world, China is offering the so-called one-hour slot on its international media to be able to tell as many stories as it possibly can of the African conscious mind.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting that they basically run the program, but it's all done by Africans, and all the topics are about Africa, and they're all positive stories. But I'd like to ask both of you first, Ayo. Are these Chinese news outlets viewed as objective by Africans?
Objective? Well, we've got to look at it. All media has an element of bias associated with it. And international media, especially over the last 10 years, by which was usually dominated by the BBCs and the CNNs of this world, have now got new players in town. Al Jazeera has taken a huge slice of that market. You now have CCTV, Russia Today, France Television, and there's so many other players in the market, everyone trying to tell the same story, but from their own perspective. And the Chinese is no different. So the notion as to whether it be balanced or fair, I think in this context it's immaterial. The question is, can Africans be seen physically to be telling their own stories? And in the case of the China model, as it's been offered to Africa in terms of the hourly slot, that's the case, which was not done previously with foreign correspondents.
Now, you've done work for CCTV and some of the Western outlets. How do they compare and contrast in your personal experience with that?
Well, Well, I think China Television, which I've done, and also CRI, the International Radio Services, I think they're very professional. They do have a sense of wanting to tell the story. I think they're no different from any of the other media outlets. The only difference is that they're new. They're not as well-known globally as some of these existing brands. Clearly a future player. And of course, there is that notion that stories that relate to China specifically may not necessarily be told in an open and fair manner. But I think that remains to be seen, and that remains to be tested as to whether the other media outlets will not necessarily do the same, irrespective of who's backing them. I mean, I'm sure if there was a story coming out of Russia and it wasn't a polite story, I'm sure Russia Today, which is a Russian-supported enterprise, would tell the story in a different manner.
What about Al Jazeera?
Likely so, with that in terms of Qatar. And likely someone would say that CNN or Fox News may have a certain twine to support an American perspective.
And Yushen, what's your take on this issue of objectivity?
I tend to agree that I think when we're looking at the Chinese media, they're coming quite fast, and we forget that they are still new and they're also still learning. And I mean, I don't represent a certain, you know, the Chinese media or a certain point of view, but I would agree that in general, if we're looking at the media market, that there is, you know, generally a political or commercial constraint, and all media stations are, you know, constrained by this. But also, I think what is interesting for me, let's say beyond this regulation, is looking at, if we're talking about all the CCTV, for example, being dominated by Africans, is in the future, I mean, what will be interesting to watch is what is it going to look like when, you know, we have a majority of Africans and Chinese media workers working together, and what kind of environment are they going to negotiate? So I think it's difficult to just see it from that they have one point of view, because we forget that there are so many faces behind this. And I would say that the positive is we sometimes forget that Africans have a point of view as well. And that if we broaden this, you know, the African audience is being provided with so much more choice.
And Aya, what? Let's go to the potential downside. What happens if there's, say, a coup in a country where they have a lot of investments? What could happen?
Well, this is where I am of the notion that what we've got to look at. If you speak to a lot of Africans who know Africans' histories going back 50 years, 100 years, they would say the colonial period was its most worst. And what they would say is that the post-colonial area, which is where we are now, is we're still being controlled to an extent. But I think China would eventually have to find a mechanism of controlling Africa in a more robust form, other than its softly diplomatic route that it's taking now. Because the contract that it's signed, the arrangements that it's made, the financial investment that it's plowed on the African continent, if fragile states, which is what we have across Africa, are owned by fragile governments, and of course fragile governments call for fragile problems, most of these states are likely to fall into different leadership structures over time. And if those leadership structures are not in keeping with China's mindset currently, then China would have to find a way short term now, looking forward into the medium and long term, to protect its investment. So in a way, China will have to find a way of colonizing Africa all over again just to protect its investment, because otherwise, how else can it protect itself? That's the worry.
And Yushen, do you agree that this is a potential pitfall that could force China to intervene with more hard power?
I'm not really sure about that. I think there's always, you know, issues when it comes to making predictions. But I think my work tries to do is really understand the complexity of an issue, rather than saying this is, you know, positive or negative. And if I'm looking at it from a China point of view, I mean, any country, any emerging country, has to balance between, you know, the harder aspects and as well the softer aspects. And I think, you know, the media and their media drive is proving that they're realizing that they need to have a different kind of influence, and that the outside world has to kind of understand China's point of view and understand China. I think my main interest is actually, you know, how do you close that gap between people, and how do you get people to want to know about each other? And I think that's the area that they are facing challenge at the moment. It's how do you get people to receive your message and understand you? And at the same time, I think we forget, okay, I mean, the thing about a rising power is this general theory that a rising power is going to cause war. And I think they're really trying to go against that. And we forget that this is still a developing country, and as much as it's, you know, going with outside engagement, it is also, majority of its policy is inward. So now, I mean, your main audience is still your own people, and if you can't manage somewhere the size of the Middle East and Europe, you know, which is what China is, that we're also putting expectations on what it needs to do outside. So I think it's the balance between the softer and the harder aspects. And I mean, I'm not really sure that we can say that it's going to, okay, you know, be forceful in Africa. I think that's a big prediction to make.
Okay, and before we continue our discussion, I do want to get into a little bit about how they're doing in the markets. I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program on our website. So please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbia.org, or you can go to our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at GJJournalist. Now, the IO, first I'll ask you, how are these expanding Chinese media outlets doing in the markets? Like, are they getting larger shares, or are they sort of on the fringes?
In Africa. I wouldn't say China is competing with the local media, because its stories have got to appeal to an international audience. But where I think local media has been affected is that when China, for example, went to Nairobi in Kenya this year, a lot of the talented journalists have simply left the existing local media. And that entire media enterprise has been completely affected by China offering better salaries, better terms and conditions. And I think that's one negative. But on an international media, I think China still has a long way to go. I mean, I'll categorize them like football teams. I mean, if you look at the Premier League, for example, you'd have the BBCs and the CNNs and the Al Jazeeras of this world. Then on the lower league teams, you would then have CCTV, Russia Today, France, and all these new media outlets that have all come up of age over the last 10 years. They've still got a long way in terms of competing in the Premier League. But nonetheless, they are trying to voice win the hearts and minds of the world. And the thing is that there's so many viewpoints out there. From a personal perspective, I think it must be very confusing for the general populace worldwide as to which media do you believe and which you trust and which stories you listen to. I would tell people, listen to as widely as possible a story as you possibly can and form your own opinion. The truth lies somewhere in the middle, right in there.
So now the Chinese state-run news agency has more than 20 bureaus in the African continent, and their business model is kind of intriguing. They're basically providing news articles at low cost and sometimes even no cost. Yushen, is that a sustainable model?
I agree with Aya. I'm not really sure. I think if we're comparing it in terms of the global media market, I think there is still a long way to go. And I have pointed to certain areas. For instance, the fact that you're a newcomer, it's the timing that you're already having to play catch up to the rest. And I think we know that. I think there is still, you know, the Chinese media still needs to be able to comment about the controversial aspects, as we've mentioned. And I think it's also, you know, the challenge is also moving away from the fact that when the outside world views the Chinese media, but it's synonymous with the government. And I think we tend to look at the Chinese media and the China as one entity, and we forget that, you know, it's actually not. And then I think another thing is what makes a news station sustainable is innovation. Like, we know CNN and how it's popular for its 24-hour news. We know about Al Jazeera because it's created citizen journalism. And I think the question for China and other emerging countries in their media is really, what can they innovate to compete? And one of the things, if we're looking at Africa, is the fact that the majority of Africans still get their information from radio. And, you know, if these countries can create this accessibility, maybe they can compete. Maybe they can provide something new. But I think, yeah, the question is, can they do this? And also, I mean, given that China is quite good at adapting, that this could happen in the future. But I think we forget that, you know, TV only started airing in January. So it's only been about nine months. I think there's still time, and I think we just have to remember that it's, you know, still early days.
And if I could just add a point.
Yes.
And this is where Africa has got to look at itself. Because in the past, the argument was that the BBCs, the CNN, the Al Jazeeras of this world only offered the 30-second, 3-minute, 2-minute soundbites relating to African stories, and it wasn't enough. There was Africa looking at a third party in terms of telling its own story, and it was then arguing to saying that they weren't telling the stories that fit the true nature of the situations on the ground, the death, disease, and destruction formula. However, now is Africa not leaning on CCTV, China television, with the same experience, leaning and relying on China to tell an hour's story of Africa, when Africa themselves should be thinking, well, hang on a second, it's about time we own our own media to be able to tell our own stories properly. And that's where fundamentally we have the problem. I mean, we have medias like ENCA, which are trying to tell a global story, a 24-hour news outlet. But we need more of those to really truly become global brands to tell the African story properly.
How could you see that happening? What are some steps that need to be taken?
It's a cost issue. To have a global outlet that, to deliver the sort of 24-hour service that you require would cost you in excess of $50 million a year. That's one. And I think there are too many billionaires, African billionaires, on the African continent not to make that become a reality. I think it's a lack of vision. That's one. And also the fact that somehow Africans have clearly not, from a leadership perspective, not woken up to the fact that the media themselves, you've got to own your own media to tell your own stories and not rely on third parties to do so for you. Because why should they? Why should they tell the perfect story? Why should they tell your story? They're only going to tell the stories that suit them or the stories that they would like to tell for others to understand it from their perspective. So Africa seems to have its model completely wrong moving forward.
Yushen, what do you think about that?
Yeah. Can I add to that?
Yes.
I totally agree with that. And I think, you know, I see myself as African as well. And I think that, you know, with technology and the rate the technology is going, it's easy to communicate. And it goes back to, I think, my main vision or, you know, my main goal is, do we want to know about each other? Because we hear a lot about the Chinese media going global, but how many African media or African media presence is there in Asia? You know, is there the opposite flow as well? And are we trying to win their minds and their hearts? And, you know, what are the outside world thinking about Africa? And what are we doing to influence their point of view?
What do you see as now we're talking about what Africa can do, but what, as far as the dynamics of all these international outlets, are the investments by China having an effect on the other international outlets?
I think all international media players now are looking at each other's, following exactly what their programming styles are, trying to make sure that they have a larger slice of the global market. I think it's very difficult. It's because you're constantly having shifting opinions. What it's come down to, in a nutshell, because we have all these media which are now owned by governments, media that's owned by conglomerates, so if something happened in France, for example, most people would tune to France 24 because that's where you're going to have the most accurate of information relating to that particular story. But however, if you think that that story is biased, you're not going to listen to them any further. You're going to look at other media to see how they are reporting the story to get a balance and form the pictures, the opinion yourself. And I think that's how people around the world are going to be viewing all these different medias who are representing all these different countries and different brands. But what worries me, again, is the fact that the only brand, the only continent that's not being represented is the African one. And somehow we're just sleeping into this vision of not having our stories told by ourselves and relying on others to do so. So that's one issue. And, of course, the other problem that you've got is the perception issue, because I'll give you a couple of examples. CCTV now, for example, has gone to Nairobi in Kenya to open its bureau. But by doing so, it means that 80% or 70% of its stories have a Kenyan focus. So a lot of Africans who would watch CCTV would think that how are they not covering my side of my world, my part of Africa? Again, if you look at ENCA in South Africa, you find that at least 60 to 70% of their stories have a South African bias in terms of the coverage of that news. So we're having these little pockets of opportunity in terms of telling the stories. And sadly, until Africa can think of a global brand that can represent all these different countries and all their different stories, we're always going to have this problem.
Okay, well, we're going to have to end on that point. It's been a fascinating conversation. Our guests have been Yushen Wu, a researcher at South African Institute of International Affairs, and Ayo Johnson, the founder and director of Viewpoint Africa. And we've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist, produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Our program is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungekar is our executive producer. An Chi Du was our lead producer. Now stay with us for Free Press Watch and join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.
And now Free Press Watch, a segment on Global Journalist where each week we bring you a rundown of major events affecting press freedom around the world. I'm Sravani Pere. Today's news stories come from Reuters, the New York Times, Committee to Protect Journalists, and the International Press Institute. At least 10 journalists in the Colombian city of Santa Marta were sent death threats after disseminating an interview in which a jailed former parliamentary commander alleged links between his organization and local politicians. The authors of the threat referred to themselves as Office of the Caribbean and labeled journalists as enemies who deserve death so that they remain quiet forever. Agents in plain clothes repeatedly attacked at least 7 journalists reporting on a protest in Belarus. Reporters and photographers from the AP and Reuters were among the attacked journalists. And according to the Committee to Protect Journalists, Belarus is one of the world's most censored nations. Meanwhile, state security agents in Gambia have ordered 2 independent newspapers to cease publication immediately and provided no explanation. Both The Standard and The Daily News have covered the controversy surrounding President Yahya Jammeh's announcement last month to execute every prisoner on death row. For more information on these events affecting press freedom around the world, please visit our website at globaljournalist.org. Thank you for joining us this week on Global Journalist. I'm Sravani Pere. See you next week.